So hi everyone. I'm going to be talking about another study that our research group has been working on related to Hurricane Sandy, which is also modeled on the study that Alexis just discussed with you regarding Hurricane Katrina. So, and today we will be focusing on some of those individual factors, but also how they may be related or mediating some of the environmental factors that we see following a storm and what the implications are on both PTSD and mental health distress. So, no relationship. So, to give you a little bit of background on Hurricane Sandy, October 2012, this was one of the most devastating storms that has hit the East Coast. Over 300,000 homes were damaged or destroyed, millions of residents without power, over $30 billion in damages both to businesses and homes, with only about a third or less than a third of that covered by insurance. So there was a significant burden of unmet need going on in the region. So the Sandy Child and Family Health Study, or SCAF as I'll refer to it, was a study conducted in the 9 most affected counties of New Jersey by our research team. And this was really an interdisciplinary team, both between our group at the College of Global Public Health at NYU, the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University, the Center for Disaster and Risk Analysis at Colorado State, and the Institute for Families at Rutgers School of Social Work. So the study was funded by the New Jersey Department of Health, where we formed a public partnership group with the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Children and Families. It was funded using social services block grant funding, and really the aims are to sort of describe and analyze the impacts and really the long-term effects of Hurricane Sandy on residents living, like I said, in the 9 most affected counties, and I'll describe in a minute how we identified that disaster region. And it really examines the factors that both help and hinder long-term recovery. So, like I said, just to tell you a little bit about the sampling and how we came up with the region that we're going to be discussing, we used 3 different data inputs to come up with our sampling frame. The first being, and I don't have it, Alexis left me the snazzy pointer. The first being storm surge data, where it was greater than a foot based on satellite imagery. The second being FEMA individual assistance claims in given zip codes. And the third being housing damage in census block groups greater than 20%. And these 3 maps led to the creation of this disaster footprint, which may be a little hard to see, but you can see the region in gray there and sort of the delineation between high-impact southern counties, as we're calling them, in northern counties. And the geography of and sort of demographic composition of North and South Jersey is very different for anyone who's sort of from that area or knows anything about it. In the north, you sort of have high-income suburbs of New York, and in the south, you have a lot of shore towns and a much sort of more dispersed region. So these three geographical layers created this disaster footprint, which encompasses a total population of over 1 million people and over 400,000 households. So to tell you, to sort of just show you quickly what that means by way of census block groups, there are 832 census block groups, which became our sampling units. From that, we randomly sampled 52 of them. We oversampled for high damage homes and for high poverty. New Jersey is one of the highest annual household income states in the country, and so we wanted to make sure we were able to capture how the storm may be affecting low-income residents, so that was a factor that we oversampled for. And again, we were interested in how damage from the storm may be affecting residents, so it was important to oversample for high damage units as well. So how did we actually do the data collection? We had a team of over 30 interviewers conducting in-person interviews. Within those census block groups I was just describing, households were randomly sampled. Interviewers followed that randomly sampled protocol in conducting these in-person interviews. The data was collected between 2 and 2.5 years following the storm, so between August 2014 and April 2015. So again, we're really focusing on long-term recovery rather than the immediate impacts of sort of response. And the hour-long survey covered a variety of topics, very similar, again, to what Alexis described that the GCAF survey covered, but including decision-making, housing transitions, so where people move to, how long did it take for them to get back into their home, their physical health, their mental health, how did the storm affect kids if they had kids in the household, and approximately 30% of our sample did. What was their social support? Did they access formal help? What was the economic burden they took on due to the storm, and what were their demographics, among other things? So here you can see a little bit, and I know, I'm sorry, it's hard to read, but just to give you the full picture and be happy to answer any more questions about this, how did the sample we got compare to sort of the weighted population? And so on the left you see the unadjusted rates, and on the right you see the weighted dates, which applies sort of weights to compensate for that oversampling I was just describing. The biggest difference is in this red section based on damage. So within our sample, approximately 30% of individuals were deemed high damage based on FEMA damage categories. And overall, in the actual population, that was actually about 11%. And so over 110,000 people. But again, it was just a little bit different in our sample. So to sort of get to a little bit more of the meat of this, how does disaster exposure affect mental health? And again, you'll see I'll be talking how we're defining these different measures. So how do we think about this? And this is a very rudimentary model, but just it may give you a little bit of a framework. We think about you're exposed to a disaster, and then there's health outcomes, and we believe that there is a relationship between disaster exposure and mental health. Numerous researchers have found that there is this relationship. And we think about exposure on two levels, on the individual level, so what happened to you, your family, your household, and then what happened to your community, and that's that population exposure. And then we think about health as not just physical health, not just mental health, but your overall well-being, though for the purposes of today, we are going to be focusing on emotional health as we're talking about mental health sort of in this session. So what are some of these numbers look like for the SCAF sample? So overall, 11% of our sample was living in a community that had high damage. And that, again, these are what I'm going to be showing you, the demographics or our weighted data. The analyses will be unweighted data just so you're aware of those differences. Individual exposure, so what happened to a person that we spoke with, or for residents living in the disaster footprint, approximately 8% or 80,000 people experienced loss of life, loss of pet, or direct injury or harm. We recognize losing a pet may not be the same as losing someone in your family, but the point of a significant loss associated with Sandy. 64%, which you can see is a very high number, over 640,000 people experience direct contact with the storm, so that's coming into physical contact with floodwaters, debris, or mold. 11% experienced major housing damage, which means your home was completely destroyed or you had to move out for more than 30 days, and approximately 9% experienced minor housing damage, which means that their house was uninhabitable for less than 30 days, but they still had to leave the home. So how about emotional health? How is were residents in the disaster footprint faring? Approximately 6% were experiencing PTSD still two and a half years following the storm. Moderate, and we used, again, the SF-12, the mental health component of the SF-12, the short form 12, to define mental health distress. Overall, approximately about 16% are experiencing mental health distress that would be interfering with their daily lives, and approximately 10% are experiencing that sort of severe mental health, which may be clinically diagnosable. So next we're going to see, how do these two relate? And when we use logistic regression models to examine this relationship, this is first looking at the effect of exposure on mental health distress, that short form 12 outcome that I was just mentioning. We see that major damage, direct harm, and direct contact are all significantly associated with the increased odds of mental health distress, which is not that surprising, right? Minor damage does not have an effect in this relationship, in this model, but major damage, direct harm, and direct contact all do. And each of these models are controlling for demographic factors. We have controlled for community damage, gender, income, race, age, kids in the household, and prior mental health diagnosis, which is important. So this is we asked residents to report if they had been previously diagnosed with a mental health condition of depression or anxiety. Next, we're going to look at the effect on PTSD, and we see very similar results, if not higher odds. So again, of major damage, direct harm, and direct contact. So this presentation is to sort of get us to move one step further and think about how does utilizing resources in the wake of a storm, especially economic resources, because that's something we had data on in our survey, shift this relationship. So you can see in a very rudimentary way, this is how we're thinking about this. Does economic resource use mediate the relationship between exposure to a disaster and health outcomes? So how are we defining economic resource use? And I tried to get call this something that would fit in that little red box, but we asked a variety of questions about the economic impacts of Sandy on the household, and this is all based on self-report data, but approximately 12% of respondents in the disaster footprint spent all or most of their savings, their personal savings, recovering from the storm. 6% used all or most of their credit. 10% identified as having an economic constraint in the household in the last 6 months, so that means there's sort of some enduring burden, independent of income, that's going on in the household that they're having trouble paying for a basic necessity. 13% lost job income due to Sandy, and approximately just 1%, but still 10,000 people lost a business. So when we put this into a model, what do we see? Again, this is using the SF-12 as the outcome in a logistic regression model. We do see an effective mediation here. Both the effect of direct harms and direct contact drop out and are no longer significantly associated with mental health distress. We see that having a continuing economic burden and having had major home damage are still significantly associated with increased odds of mental health distress, and again, controlling for the same factors. We see a similar relationship, though with slightly different factors, with the effect on PTSD. And this sort of makes sense that the direct harm would be an enduring factor as it relates to PTSD, which is specifically associated with sort of factors related to remembering the enduring experience of Sandy. You can imagine that loss would be associated higher increased odds of PTSD sort of as an enduring characteristic. But again, we see a mediated relationship here when we're considering these economic factors, and that economic burden, again, is a significantly increases the odds of having PTSD. So I just sort of summarized this, but in both cases, the relationship between exposure and health is mediated by economic factors, which is something that we hadn't previously looked at. There is, in both cases, a continuing economic burden that is a significant risk factor for both types of mental health distress, both as we quantified it by the SF-12 and for PTSD. So what are some of the limitations? We don't have any confirmatory data on pre-existing mental health conditions. We don't know for sure that the ongoing economic burden is Sandy-related. But we do know that this burden is independent of income, which is something important to keep in mind. So oftentimes we think, you know, those who are in sort of lower income situations are going to be worse off post-disaster. But in these models, income was actually not a significant factor. Any relationship between income and mental health distress is explained away by these economic and exposure factors that we've just been describing here. We do believe that there could be a relationship between some of those economic things that we've just described. Sort of spending, savings, and credit could be related to an increased economic burden, and that we could explore that further through structural equation modeling. And that there's other forms of resource use that may be able to buffer this relationship, which could further be explored as we expand our theoretical model. And so what are the implications of this? And then I'll sort of wrap up. We know that storm exposure is a risk factor for mental health distress, but we also know that an increased economic burden shifts this relationship. So if we could reduce the out-of-pocket economic burden on individuals following a disaster, we may help to reduce the ongoing mental health issues. And so identifying folks who are at risk for this based on housing damage and then identifying sort of the out-of-pocket spending that's having to go on in households is one way to sort of get at this and try to mitigate these effects. So that's it. If you're interested more in the Sandy and Child and Family Health Study, go to fcaf.org. We'd be happy to answer any questions. Thanks.